Greetings, everybody. It's Chapo, Monday, January 16th. Wishing everyone a happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Hope you are enjoying the day off. But the clock don't stop for us. We're coming at you. Pleased to announce once again, we are joined by a longtime friend of the show, Chapo champion and thoroughbred. It's Brian Quimby, Murder Brian, back in the cut. Once again, Brian, welcome back.
I apologize for knocking my Legos over the second you said my name.
It's Lego Masters breakout.
My God, is that Murder Brian's music?
The Lego noise, there's just every podcast I've done for like a year has me fucking around with Legos, which is, I fucking swore on my life I would never get into Legos. Like, I was never going to become a Lego guy because it feels like a Disney guy.
What situation were you in where you had to swear that?
Well, I just, you guys know how I am about, like, even when I was a kid, I was like, I want to be an adult. Like, I just want to be a 35-year-old man.
Yeah. No, I get it.
So you make deals with yourself where you're like, oh, you know, I'm never going to be like a Disney guy. And then, like, all of a sudden, like, Disney buys everything. And now there's like even cool Disney guys. And you're like, oh. I don't know, but I'm a Lego guy, so I can't make Legos and pro wrestling. Like, I can't make fun of anybody, but I do anyway.
Worst
things.
There was I'd say like late 2017 through early 2019, you could audibly hear the click and clack of my mechanical keyboard during every episode because I was gaming, and you know,
Wait, hold on. Wait, this is the first I'm hearing of this. Felix was very distracted. The shows are very bad, but he led a wonderful life playing video games while he should have been podcasting.
Well, you can do both. I don't really see. I don't see like. Yeah, you can. I probably did 120 episodes while engaged in competitive gameplay, and none were the wiser. Listen, it probably made the show better.
Honestly, dude, it's so funny that you say that because the first season of Shocktober is one of people's favorite things that I ever did. And I can definitely hear you gaming while you're doing it. And I'm like, he's fucking on fire, man. It doesn't matter what he's doing over there.
Well, it like helps me because it instead of just like sitting around, I'm distracting the frontal lobe of my brain that would usually be worried about like taxes or like, you know, am I going to get the heavier credit card that gives me more miles? You know, did I fuck up? Does Delta still, are they going to give me the autism console that I get in business class if I get the platinum credit card? But when I've got nothing, when I've got no equivalent to Legos or vaping or emails is one of my favorite. I'm just, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. You need a meditative activity, or at least high IQ individuals do.
When you're a five-tool podcaster like Felix, you need, like, when you're that talented at both gaming and podcasting, you need the two things to kind of cancel each other out. Because if you focus too much on it, you know, it's like, you know, trying to start a really good car, you know, and then you keep it in the first gear.
I mean, I have been gaming less ever since I reached Master Guardian 2 in CSGO because I don't. That was farther than I ever thought I would go. So now it's just all playing with house money. So it's a lot of emails and things like that now as my other activity. I might move on to Rubik's Cubes, though.
Oh, you got to get something, dude. I'm telling you, a thing in your hand, a tactile thing. Like I said, I didn't want to be a Lego guy. It just like sort of found me. Somebody gave me one as a gift. And
that's how they get you.
And then when you go and look how much they cost, you just want to die. Like you think, how much could something like this cost? And I am currently considering a 3D printer to make my own Legos.
That is, oh my God.
I think that's highly illegal. I think that Lego's going to send a fucking SWAT team to your house and just destroy that shit with a mallet if you try.
That is like the toy equivalent of making your own like bathtub fentanyl that kills you after you can't get heroin.
Exactly. I just am trying to make it cheaper. And then I was like Googling, like, how much is a 3D printer?
How much is a 3D printer?
I search in complete sentences.
Yeah. Because if you find that a 3D printer... if you find that a 3D printer is cheaper than your Lego habit, then yeah, sure, go for it.
It is, Brian. What are you telling you? It is,
Brian. What do you do with the Legos once they're constructed? Because I mean, you must have tons of them. Like, where do you store? Do you store them? Do you break them down after a while? Do you like categorize the pieces so you can build other things? Like, are they all just displayed in your house?
I try to sell them. And also, yeah, I listen to my wife complain that there's Legos everywhere around the house. Like, why do we have to have a Lego Bowser in our living room where people come and visit?
It's funny. Like, it's funny for that to be a problem, like, after your kid goes to college.
Yes. My daughter graduates high school in May, and I'm like, I'm just getting into toys, really. So when she was little, we went and looked at Legos, and I noticed that like the cheapest sets were like $80. And I was like, we're never doing this. We're never going to get into this hobby. And now it's like, she's never home and I'm the one playing with the toys. It's wild. It's really weird that you guys have met my daughter when she was like 5 or 6, and now she's 18.
Wow.
No, yeah. Time, like, I was going over the timetable the other day over how long we've all known each other, how long we've been doing this. I've technically known most of you and technically been in the podcast business since undergrad, since like 2013.
Yeah, I think I started podcasting, weirdly enough. I started podcasting in like 2006, which was like, I don't know, it like nobody knew how to do it. And so all of my shows were 6 hours long because I wanted to do Opie and Anthony. It's like, oh, we're going to have to really do a long show. They do it every day. It must be possible. And then, you know, we end up learning that like we end up noticing once we've started podcasting, like Opie and Anthony play like 8 of the same bits every day, you know, like they play like a parody song and they get 5 or 6 minutes out of that, which I would have liked to have seen come to podcasting, the parody song. But, well, I guess Howell does it. Hal Dottie does it. But like it just we left out soundboards and parody songs. But I am launching a new thing, so I might get a soundboard now.
Does Lego make one?
No, that would be sweet if I could get. Well, I do have a Lego Super Nintendo over here. A Lego NES that I probably could use as some sort of a thing.
I mean, soundboards aren't without precedent. You know, the formerly Cometown, made strides in the use of soundboards in podcasting technology.
I mean, and I was doing a call-in show, but I'm such a coward that I couldn't do the toilet flushing sound when somebody got annoying or something. Like, it would have been great to be able to do that, but it was just like, I can't be mean to these people. I'm sorry. I don't even know how they did it. I remember somebody suggested one time that me and Felix should go to Chicago and say that we want to honor Mancow and then bring him on stage and goof on him. And I was just like, I don't think either one of us have that killer in us.
Face to face, I don't think I could do that. I think I also like, I just like Mancow too much. Like, I have no malice in my heart against Mancow. With Greaseman, like, I think I could execute Greaseman. I think I could be, like, if I was a state's agent executioner, I think I could do it and, like, I don't know, go to dinner with my family afterwards. I could go play, like, not Legos. So they have, like, weird new toys. I have to get my niece, like, a $170 magnet playing thing. I think I could do that with my niece after executing Greaseman. But if I was mean to Mancow in person, it would be tough for me to live with myself.
I mean, there is something about like the guy, like I really like guys that lie. And
exactly.
He is the biggest liar I have. I've never heard somebody say something so when he said, and I heard it, I played the audio that he was the last person to talk to Brandon Lee before he died. And that brand.
He was the guy who loaded the fucking gun on set.
Well, no, he was on the phone. Brandon Lee called him and said, "I don't know. I don't feel good about this scene." It's like story.
He's such a good person. Like just Brandon Lee. Brandon Lee thought he was like he had like 30% idea that he was going to die, and he's like, "Who should the last person I talk to be?" I know, man cow. Man cow, tell my story to the world if I pass on. He's such a fucking good person.
I know. Also, Hervé Villechaize. He was the last person to talk to Hervé Villechaize before he died. He was also the last
person. If you're interested
in
not dying, don't call man cow.
Yeah, definitely do not.
He's also the last person to talk to Chris Farley before he died. So,
pretty sure that was the hooker in the room with him when he died.
It's wild, though, to be a guy that like tells somebody. I did a clip of him recently on Twitter where he was in Monte Carlo. And
sophisticated. Was he wearing like a James Bond tux and everything?
Yeah, he was dressed up. He was dressed up, and he said he was going in to have lunch with some prince or some royalty, and everybody replied to me and said, "That guy's been dead for 20 years. Like,
he's like, I'm about to go on a date with Grace Kelly."
I was the car that ran Mariska Hargitay's mom off the road.
But that's what I've always found fun about, like, those guys or any of the guys really that, like, I've found is, like, the best ones are the liars and the ones that take credit for, like, it being the first to, like, the Whip 'Em Out Wednesday thing is my favorite one, right? Like, there's three people that take credit for that. And, like, Howard Stern said you put a bandana around your antenna and women will show their tits to you. Opie and Anthony said put
a sticker, the Whip 'Em Out Wednesday sticker.
And Tom Likas said to flash your brights at people in LA and women will show your tits, which is like that one doesn't even work.
No, that's how you get that's how you accidentally get involved in a gang initiation where you're killed for flashing your lights at someone. So like Tom Blake is actively trying to get people killed with this Whip 'Em Out Wednesday thing. I just want to go back for a second because I think listeners of our show, they you know, probably through Shocktober, I think like they're probably familiar with Man Cow and Stern and Opie and Anthony, but could you just give just a little background on anyone who's not familiar on the Grease Man, Felix could dump a gallon of barbiturates into this guy's veins and then take his niece out for ice cream without batting an eye. So just
I would feel
just
nothing.
Fill us in on the Grease Man.
He's has said truly some of the nastiest stuff I've ever heard, and like for people that sort of listen to Shocktober and know about it, it's like we listen to people say nasty stuff. The whole point of the fucking show is to listen to people say nasty stuff. But the Grease Man, he talks like a baby, you know, like he has like a weird baby thing. He has these really strange, like, he has these really strange, like, parody songs that don't make any sense.
Yeah, it's Friday, the weekend's here, and we'll have a kid of me. We'll relax, hallelujah, hallelujah, and take off our slags, hallelujah, hallelujah, and sit around the house in our rotten underwear.
But he said some of the most racist things I've ever heard somebody say in my life. The dude got fired, came back, got fired again. And he said something about Lauryn Hill that is, it's just, you don't even want to
like unrepeatable.
Unrepeatable.
That's what's crazy about Greaseman is like, you listen to his show and like, I would say a good 40% of it is like, literally baby talk. It's him going like, a goo goo gaga, boo da boo da boo, shibbity boo boo, when you got your shibbity boo boo. Just like stuff you say to a toddler to entertain them. Then the other like 30-60% is like it's parody songs, but it'll be like Mambo Number 5 reworked to be about how you can never get paper clips to work right. like that type of thing. And then the remaining content is like Turner Diary shit.
The most it's like calling
just like beyond just like casual racism. This is black tie racism. This is like he's like calling black people like subhuman. Mm-hmm. Like saying like the type of stuff that like Varg says. And it he is one of the most astounding puzzles that we have ever worked on.
He calls blowjobs snarlins. Mm. He calls having you get some snarlins. He calls having
the Jabberwocky
prison.
Yeah,
he calls having missionary sex hobbledegee, and then having anal sex bobbledegee.
Hey, I got a hobbleman story for you.
All right, go ahead.
I hear you talking all the time about you and Oscar. You know, double deucing.
Yeah.
Me and my pappy, we did the same thing.
You and your dad do?
Yeah. Well, we double deuced the same girl. He was getting a snarling, and I was like, "Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy?"
And like, he just has these words where you're like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And then he's one of the most evil men in the world.
Yeah. It is like it is kind of like how the Nazis were obsessed with finding Santa. That is kind of the situation we're dealing with Grease Man.
Just a really weird dude, man. Just like a real relic of like, I don't know. The thing I always come back to is like real hard. Like dudes would just listen to this stuff in their car on the way home. And like, I think about like a construction worker listening to Howard Stern talk about the Golden Globes for an hour and a half. And I'm just like, what is going on?
A construction worker on the way home from the job site. Just on the way home from the job site to get some boobly boo from the old wifey back at home.
To get some who's your daddy, who's your daddy, who's your daddy. That's another one. That's doggy style sex.
Repulsive.
Another thing I will note about the Grease Man is that he's an outlier in the shock jock of the shock jock species, because most of them, whether they're Lycus or Bubba the Love Sponge, they're gentlemen of a rotund caliber. They're big guys, and the images that you shared of Grease Man, he's very gaunt. It looks like his skin is just stretched over his face, like a foreskin being pulled back or something.
He's handsome. I will give him, not now. I think the evil in his heart has like kind of made him. But when his whole thing was like that, like the story, the biggest story I heard about the Grease Man was that he was afraid for people to see him because he would go on the air and talk about how he lifts weights and, you know, he eats tuna fish to make himself stronger and shit like that. And then people saw him and they actually got mad at him because of how he looked. And I just, that takes me so back to like growing up when it's a shame that everybody just sees everybody now, I think.
Yeah.
It does hurt the magic of some of this stuff.
Yeah. Except for, I think Bubba the Love Sponge is like the one person where he looks exactly as you would imagine him or like to imagine him. But Grease Man did get into bodybuilding. And he got into bodybuilding, I mean, he did get like decently strong for a 40-year-old man, but it made him look more like a concentration camp commandant.
Well, and I'll say this, like all these guys, like I don't end up liking a lot of these guys, but the one I truly love, and like I never have gotten into any of these guys' shows except for Bubba the Love Sponge.
You and love him, just, yeah.
I do. I don't. He says he's working on. Okay, I've been told this might be a lie, but he says he's working on a 4-part documentary series about himself for Netflix, and I think that's gonna just.
Oh, that's content gold right there, Brian. I hope he's not lying about that.
They should absolutely let him do that. They did a fucking like 12-hour documentary about some bullshit like 90s ad campaign involving a jet. Do you mm-hmm. remember this?
Yeah. Yeah.
They will give anything a 10-hour fucking documentary treatment. The guy who let his wife get banged by Hulk Hogan and inadvertently destroyed Gawker absolutely deserves a freaking documentary about himself.
Inadvertently also kind of destroyed Hulk Hogan, although Hulk Hogan has money because of this, but like, I don't think any of that racist stuff comes out if that set, because he's racist in the sex tape. And I just don't think any of that racist stuff comes out if they don't have this, which is crazy. Hulk Hogan just had sex and he wants to be racist immediately.
It's sort of like the George Costanza thing of like eating while you're having sex.
Yeah. Yeah. Life's two greatest pleasures.
Both pleasures are heightened.
Yeah.
And the story about how that tape went missing is like, I think, a great mystery. I would say that because Bubba says he didn't sell the tape. He didn't make any money. It did ruin his life. Like, he was living in, he used to have a $12 million mansion, and he was living in a fucking, his car next to his studio for a while after that. He lost his job. He lost his friends and shit like that. So he claims he didn't do it. And then there is the other side where he's probably lying because, like, why would you tell the truth about that?
Well, can we talk about one of my favorite guys? I mean, we're talking guys. There's one gentleman in particular that, Brian, I wanted to have you on to discuss. And that man is Dwight the General Manfredi.
Yes.
Tulsa King. That's right. I'm sorry if you've not caught up on Tulsa King, but the season finale is, the season one is now concluded. And I really do feel, Brian, I had to get you on to talk Tulsa King because, as I said from the first episode, this is the show. This is the show on TV that's giving me that Kurt Sutter, Sons of Anarchy feeling. And the finale of Tulsa King had a couple of the best Sons of Anarchy moments, like on a TV show that I've seen since that show went off the air. So, just to start out, Brian, like your experience with Tulsa King and your relationship with Dwight the General Manfredi, played by Sylvester Stallone.
So first off, like I didn't. So somebody asked me this yesterday, right? Like in the 2000s and 2010. There was butt rock was this type of music that was sort of an amorphous, undefined thing, but it ended up being like just kind of a crappy copy of grunge, like post grunge stuff. And
Puddle
like
of Mud.
Yes, exactly. So it kind of sounds like Nirvana, but it's not. Somebody said, is there butt TV? And I was like, you know what? I think everything I like is butt TV because
Kurt Sutter, the king of butt television.
Yeah. Cause you think about like these shows are kind of like prestige TV. Like they have the beats and kind of the stories.
They're generally like they look well done. Like they've got good actors.
Pacing.
Yeah.
but they're not, they're incredibly stupid. Like Tulsa King, I watched the first 7 episodes in one fucking night. I just, my wife watched it with me. I couldn't stop.
I have the same thing. I went in sprees of Tulsa King. It's not the type of show I watch one of and I'm like, oh, well, time to do, you know, whatever. No, that's just the rest of my fucking day. And like, I consider myself like a student of prestige and sub prestige. I think I coined the term Showtime prestige, which is like a very specific type of premium cable show.
Your Ray Donovans.
Yeah, your Ray Donovans, your Billions, that type of thing where it's like a marriage of an FX show and an HBO show where it has like the stupidity and fun of FX, but some of the trappings and even pretensions of a real prestige show. Tulsa King is the first of its kind I've seen that's like, I don't know what I would call it. Maybe like Stars prestige, even though it's not on Stars. It feels
like it should be on Stars.
It lacks like the complexity and subtlety of like Homeland, but it is so thrilling and so eminently watchable to the point that it will take over your day. It's a new genre of prestige. I don't know what I would call it. Maybe like idiot prestige.
It is. I mean, that's the shit. I started The Mayor of Kingstown too.
I couldn't recently. Get into that. I had a hard time getting into that.
It's too much of a bummer. It's like that last year of Sons of Anarchy where it's like, this isn't fun anymore. This guy's just a mass murderer at this point. But like with Tulsa King, there is a thing in Tulsa King that I think is perfect, that I love. And it is when the dumbest guy in the world is the smartest guy in the room. That's what makes a good TV show. it's like Axe on Billions. Like, he's not that character is not written to be a genius, but he wins all the time. Jax Teller is the perfect, like, he's what a dumb guy would think a smart guy is. And I think that is like, that's what makes perfect TV.
So, yeah, I mean, like, along those lines, I have a few notes on how Tulsa King, the season one wrapped up. And you'll remember our last episode on Tulsa King. It's like, basically, tensions are brewing between Dwight Manfredi and his, what should be his mafia family back in New York. You've got Dominic Lombardozzi. And I remember I made note of the ridiculous wig he was wearing in the first episode. Well, thank God that paid off, because after Dominic Lombardozzi kills his father in a bathtub to take over the mafia family, as to sort of announce his coming out as a mafia don, he removes the ridiculous wig to reveal what we've all known, that he's just a completely bald guy. He's just got no hair.
And I gotta say, I gotta apologize to Tulsa King. I did not trust them enough when we were talking about it the first seven episodes, because I said, like, hey, at least when they did this with Corey Stahl in The Strain, they had him get rid of the wig halfway through. Not only did they have this happen with his wig, but it's a character beat, because he's got the wig on when he's drowning his dad in the bathtub. But then it's a dramatic reveal when, like, they're carting the body away and all the well wishes are in the house, and he comes down the stairs and it's revealed that he has removed the wig to show he is now no longer hiding anymore. He is now going to be the mafia don, and he's going to take the family in his clutches. And his baldness, his true self, is being revealed in that moment. Whereas opposed with Corey Stahl in The Strain, they were just like, okay, nobody's buying this. Let's just say that he wants to evade capture because he's on the run. Whatever. Just get that fucking wig off his head.
Well, something I loved about Tulsa King is that it is about a 75-year-old man that every time he punches somebody, he nearly kills them.
Like, you described it to me. It's like,
he is a physical force. He is the strongest, fastest man in the entire state, in the entire region. He is like, I don't think there's anyone who can physically stand up to, yes, this man who was born presumably right after World War II.
Brian, you described to me, it's like a 75-year-old man with the physique and physical power of Jack Reacher. Jack Reacher as a senior citizen, but you know, he's got class. So Dwight's former mafia family, the old Don dies or is murdered by his son. The bald son takes over, and the first order of business: we gotta whack this freaking guy, Dwight. I'm tired of his disrespect. This Mama Lukey's. And they're like, oh, he's a made guy. And he goes like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm boss of this family now. And then meanwhile, back in Tulsa, Dwight puts together his own family, including the the former employees of the marijuana store he's now extorting. He just shanghais into being in his new mafia family, and they're like, are we gonna be killed by the mafia or a biker gang? And he's like, not if we stick together and be a family. You gotta be a family.
He does the kidnapping version of employment, and it's just like Dwight Manfredi's criteria for like who should be in the mafia is just like, have I met them? Are they the first person I've met? Like, literally his like combination capo regime, consigliere, and underboss is the first guy he met, which is his Uber driver. That's enough for him. Did I meet you? Okay, you have all the responsibilities in the world.
Matt pointed out to me, because I'm not good at this stuff, that one of his partners is Vinny Delpino from Doogie Howser. Yeah, I was like, I recognize that guy. But that's another guy, like, I think one of my favorite parts of the show is that guy, like, really does try to kill Dwight Manfredi.
Yeah.
And then within one episode, he's like, hey, let's work together, you know, it's gonna be really fun. Like, he forgives the guy for shooting at his head while he was learning to drive, by the way.
And not only that, not only does he forgive the guy who tries to kill him during the driving test, he does so much more than that. He gives him his self-respect back because, you know, he's been hiding out and he's like, you know, you can't hide for too long. Sometimes you got to stand up. And the guy's like, thanks, guy. I was trying to kill an episode ago. You really, you've given me my life back. Oh, by the way, my wife has left me. But you know what? That's a good thing because I can be I can be my own man now.
Well, that is a metaphor for his namesake, the real Dwight Eisenhower for Operation Paperclip. He does his own Operation Paperclip with all the guys that were previously trying to kill him.
Another thing I like, there's another, so the his mafia family sends a guy from Brooklyn out to Tulsa. And then what happens? Dwight just recruits him. He's like, you want to join my family? And he's like, yeah, okay, these guys suck. All right, I'm with you now. That's all it takes.
It makes it seem like Tulsa really has it going on because, like, everybody that comes to Tulsa in this show is like, you know what? I love Tulsa. It's great. It is. I've been to Tulsa before.
Yes. Including the guy that Dominic Lumberzano sends by train because he hates airplanes to Tulsa to like see what's going on with Dwight. When he's then met by the crew, the whole mob family to show up and just have like a stand and glare confrontation. Dwight's like, hey, you want to join us? And he just walks over and he's like, I'm with you guys now. Okay. Forget Brooklyn. Tulsa's for me now.
Matt, I love that scene.
Your vision of running a casino in the back of a honky tonk on a Indian reservation has me inspired to leave New York City and its promise.
That scene was incredible because like the whole season is building up. It's like, these guys from New York, they're gonna whack Dwight, you know, and they go out to Tulsa under the guise of some armistice, to make peace, to break bread with Dwight, but they're only going there to kill him. And you think that this is gonna like come to a head, and maybe they're gonna like take a, you know, try to kill him or something like that. But like essentially, Dwight just shows up to their hotel and like meets them on the rooftop pool, like just sort of like you said, Matt, stands and stares at them with his crew, and then he's like, if you ever come to my fucking city again, I'm gonna fucking kill you. And then they're like, all right, bye. No, but even better than that, they're like, oh, how many of you got in your crew? And then Dwight's like, see those guys over there? See those guys over there? They're with me now. And the guys that he hires to be his like his muscle in his crew are literally two sets of cowboys and Indians. So he's got both cowboys and Indians being like shooters for him. And like, that's it. We never see Dominic Lombardzano and his bald dome again. They just go back to New York. I mean, assumingly, you know, season two of Tulsa King, I'm sure they're going to keep this going.
Yeah, but, no. Yeah, it'll keep going. The war will keep going. But
the war between Tulsa and New York.
he can only expand his gang. And the gang includes, okay, we already went over Uber driver. Guy who tried to kill him. There's like a self-harming emo girl.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's
weird
one of his soldiers.
Who happens to be a crack shot.
There's a blue hair exennial they them who worked at the vape shop, who is and also was taught to was taught firearms by her suicidal father. And uses them to commit just cold-blooded murder.
Yeah, she shoots the guy right in the head.
Like the first episode, she was like, you guys are triggering me right now.
Yeah, she is the first they-fab to kill a made man in the mafia.
I would also say that I think the scene that really I bought into and my wife bought into is when they're smoking weed in the truck. Yeah. And he's just talking about pronouns, but you think he's going to say something like mean about pronouns, but instead he's just like, oh, just, you know, you just got to be who you're going to be. You know, I'm too old to figure this stuff out, but you got to be who you're going to be. And I was like, okay, that was like a little more mature than I expected from this show.
It was surprisingly reasonable. I feel like there was like after the midterms, there was an emergency rewrite. Where they're like, okay, like normal people have rejected culture war. We have to make Dwight Manfredi anti-libs of TikTok. Maybe that's someone he goes after in season two. Someone is trying to extort the local school by putting their teachers on Libs of TikTok. And Dwight Manfredi has to beat up a hideous Chabad woman.
I really hated that the ATF agent that he charmed turned on him like that.
Yeah,
to me,
cold blooded.
Yeah, that's too much for me. I can't. I don't want him to spend a lot of. I hopefully he's out of jail right away.
Yeah,
in the new season, because I don't. I mean, when he was in jail, he did read a lot of good books.
Shows like this, like the judicial system. All you have to do to get out of like a 30-year prison sentence or a 30 to life prison sentence where you are like on tape committing several murders and racketeering is like send a letter to three judges. You have to like do a favor for a guy who's also in jail, and he will somehow get you out of your gas price sentence. I'm not too worried about Dwight going back to prison. That's just not what happens in these shows.
I'm not worried because season two is going to open with another 20-year jump into the future, and he's coming up with his next 20-year jail sentence, and he's now 130 years old, and they're like flying cars, and he's like, what the hell? I just used to be on the ground. I can't take this shit.
Yeah, and his new mafia is like the maid from the Jetsons. George Jetson.
It's funny that it's funny because like I'm guessing that he seduces the ATF woman again and she gets him out.
Yeah.
Is what my guess is, because he has also like, that's the other thing about him is like, he's just everybody, all the women want to fuck him. He's 75. But yep. he does.
Dana Delaney's out there in her cowboy hat, just like, yes, please.
Dana Delaney, by the way, still looking great.
Not looking bad.
Still absolutely. Looks great. I think it's going to be more of an emotional play because he's already shown his sexual prowess. But it's going to be something like, hey, look, I know you got a job to do, but I've just spent 1/3 of my life in this thing. I'm just meeting my daughter for the first time. When are you going to let a guy like me get to meet the people most important to him? Let me be around my family. And that'll like touch her heart in some way. Or if they go really stupid, he'll represent himself in court and win. Oh,
yes. Yes. I mean, it is wild because we keep hearing reading these stories about like people from like California and New York, like moving to these towns and like driving the rent up. And now Dwight Manfredi's doing that just simply by himself in Tulsa with all the people that are like his daughter moved there, her kid. I don't know if her husband was there yet. She might have.
I did not see him. I don't know. Did she leave his ass?
Yeah, I wonder if, because he was like, I'm not leaving New York. He's the most reasonable guy in the show.
He's the most white negative guy in the show, too. More so than the people who are trying to kill him. The people who are trying to kill him are like, we have to kill him because he is Dwight Eisenhower. Like, he is a general. He's a commander. He's a threat to him. And the husband is the only guy who's like, this is a 75-year-old murderer. Like, why are we like reorienting our life around him?
Yeah.
Like,
he's everyone and also, else is just like, no, he's cool.
Yeah. Also, in the last episode, it flashes back in time to show you the crime that Dwight went to jail for, which is spectacularly stupid. It's basically some mook is getting shaken down by like the bad mafia guys, by the bald guy and the dude who played Lucky Luciano on Boardwalk Empire. The guy was like, this Dwight's got no freaking respect. So they're like beating the shit out of some guy that they've like handcuffed to a radiator, and they like burn his face with like a spatula or something. And then like, he's like, I don't want to go. I don't have the money. Please just call Dwight. And then like his other guy, the guy who fled to Tulsa, is like calls Dwight, and he's like, Dwight, you gotta come. They're burning this guy's face. So like they come to this like the fucking abandoned building in Brooklyn. And then like you realize that Dwight wasn't trying to kill this guy, but like the other two idiots just knock over, like, I don't know, an oil burning lamp or something.
They made a potato masher into a bran.
Yeah.
And then they dropped it on some rags fire to explode.
And then they're like, oh shoot, we better get out of here. And then like the guy who's handcuffed to the radiator is like, Dwight, you gotta help me. And then he tries to shoot the handcuff and he's like, oh,
and it
shit.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work. He's like,
he says like freaking premium steel.
He's like, ah, shit. And the guy's like, Dwight, you got to help me. And then Dwight's like, I'm all right. I'm going to help you. I'm sorry. And then he just shoots him in the head because he's like, I'm not going to let you burn up. I'm not going to let you burn. And then he like walks out of the building and there's like cops already there. So like he basically, like and earlier in the show, he said, yeah, I killed the guy. I think kind of in a way I did him a favor. And it's like, yeah, you know, in a way it was an act of compassion. You know, he chose to shoot a guy in the head rather than watch him burn to death. So we realize what assholes the whole New York mafia has been, and as I just mentioned, like there really is no climax between him and the New York family other than a tense meeting at a rooftop pool that ends in basically just two people walking away, and that's it. However, I do need to talk about the Rebel Outlaw Motorcycle Club,
Black Adam.
Now, Brian, I need to talk about this because I mean, I feel like my podcasting career really began with the observation that the Sons of Anarchy are killing roughly two dozen people a year for like an annual income of probably $30,000, like the crimes that they do. So like Taylor Sheridan and Terrence Winter have created in Black McAdam an outlaw motorcycle club that is even dumber than the Sons of Anarchy, right?
But actually profitable.
Yeah,
they actually put some stacks together.
So this is the irony.
What they do?
There's no explanation for how they have that money.
The main Black Adam guy, like the scary Irish guy, has like a flash drive with like $8 million in cryptocurrency on it, or it's in some like bank in the Bahamas. And then the Martin Starr character just hacks him and takes away all his money.
Yeah, just takes it. He sent him a phishing email.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm so conflicted, by the way, by Martin Starr being in this because I love Martin Starr. I've loved him in all his iterations. One of my favorite TV actors. A guy who should be in more things. And obviously incredibly happy to see him on screen in anything. But seeing him in this is like a little depressing for me. It is like to me, Martin Starr should be like up for an Academy Award for some like bullshit, you know, A24 movie about, I don't know, a diet that kills people. I don't know, some elevated horror bullshit. But instead, he's in Tulsa King. And as much as I love seeing him in this, I do want more prestige for Mr. Starr.
Yeah, it the thing is, though, this is, I think, TV now. I do think that the prestige TV thing is very dead. Like, I can't think of anything that I've watched recently that had those. I'm Better Call Saul. I think maybe Better Call Saul is the thing.
That's going to be the last one. I think that's the last of the genre.
The only two.
And even that was a fucking spinoff. And like the new Cadillac HBO series that just debuted is a fucking adaptation of a video game.
Yeah.
Zombie thing too.
It's
a fucking,
over.
Yeah.
Zombies.
The only two going concerns that I could have seen as prestige in any other era, also HBO, are White Lotus and Succession. Those are the only two conventional things still holding that flag. As far as like, you know, Sopranos, Deadwood, Rome, there's really nothing else like that. I think we are heading for a more unpretentious time, perhaps.
Taylor Sheridan is just gonna
make everything. Dude, like eventually there will be a TV series covering every year up until the year like 2022. So it'll be Yellowstone 1984, a Yellowstone origin story, and it'll just cover all the Yellowstone ranch and like every era of American history will be fully. Saturation Taylor Sheridan coverage here. The battle space has been prepared.
Yeah, and then
you know what?
The next prestige thing, the actual next prestige thing after White Lotus and Succession that'll be made in 15 years when the culture recycles, that I think we can pitch and we can run. It will be a prestige show about the interpersonal war between Kurt Sutter and Taylor Sheridan.
Well, have you guys, because like I tried to watch Yellowstone.
I couldn't get into it.
Not for me.
The first episode is 90 minutes. You don't do that. I went with Open Range, which I think was actually very fun and cool. I don't know if you guys watched that yet. I don't know how Amazon pilled you are, because like I think it's horrible. There's like nothing great on it. Well, The Boys is okay.
People have told I like The Boys a lot too, but people told me Yellowstone gets like really good and crazy and over the top if you stick with it. But like the first couple episodes that I watched of it just felt like sort of like the right wing version of The West Wing, you know, where like
characters
will just say like libertarian canards, but in a cool way. And Kevin Costner just is so ridiculous. Like, it's just, whereas Sly is like good ridiculous, and Kevin Costner doesn't know how stupid and insane his performance is.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, Yellowstone.
Kevin
Costner,
he's just talking like Kevin Costner's just doing a bad Clint Eastwood impression, and it doesn't suit him. Whereas Sly is just being Sly. He's Dwight. He's the general.
Yellowstone is like, it's a show for like Trump 2016 to Biden 2020 voters. That's like the type of person who watches that show. That's why it's so successful. It is for the most median of median Americans.
It is the biggest. It is one of the biggest shows on TV for sure. And you hear that all the time about how like this show is just a juggernaut with like these massive ratings. But it's like, I don't know if I liked like the things I've liked recently are Reacher. And
Reacher was so much fun, it
was the most perfect show, and like I really liked that, and Open Range, and like a lot of the stuff I like is like comedy stuff, which was like unheard of years ago, because like everything's a dramedy now, you know, and leaning heavily on the drama part of it. It is very hard to find somebody doing actual real comedy. Well, Southside is a show that I love.
Southside is very good. I recently have been made aware of it. It's very good. Goliath. I really like Goliath.
The Billy Bob show? The
Billy Bob show, Goliath, is terrific, I think.
I watched the first season of that. I thought it was good.
I liked it.
Has anybody seen Sneaky Pete?
I have not watched that one.
No, I've not seen it.
I think I watched the first season of that, and I was like, that's fine, but that's as much as I need. I don't need any more.
Well, there's so many of these things that have come out recently that had like 9 seasons. Like Animal Kingdom is a show that I truly don't, that me and Will should watch it. We should be watching Animal Kingdom, but I just am convinced that like 50,000 people watched Animal Kingdom.
I would say the for me, my favorite show currently in the TV multiverse, beyond even Tulsa King, it is a very soy choice, but I would have to say I like The Boys the most. I feel like it has the most jejun that Banshee had, not just because of Anthony Starr. It has a very 2006-ism to it. I truly, truly love that show in a way that nothing else is really, really doing it for me in that same way. I still watch Billions. I think I really like Corey Stahl. He's just not the same.
He's not Bobby Axe.
I mean, like Damian Lewis, I don't think he would like to hear this. I don't think he likes this about himself, but he was born to lead Showtime shows, and they just can't. They need him, and Giamatti is doing a hell of a fucking job carrying that thing without Bobby Axe, but it's just not the goddamn same. And I just,
it's not the
boys,
same once they stop making Giamatti's weird sex weird sexual fetishes a big part of the show.
They've come back.
All right, okay, good. Yes. Good, thank God for that. I just really quick, so we're talking about comedy in the guise of drama and vice versa. I gotta talk about like two of the funniest moments on television that I've seen in years that were contained in the Tulsa King season one finale. All right, so I was talking about Dwight and his New York family. That battle has been deferred to season two, but the showdown between him and America's worst biker
so
gang.
Stupid.
Black McAdam. Black McAdam exploded in the season finale. So like the leader of Black McAdam is like this, just an Irish guy. I don't know how he ended up in Tulsa, because it's so funny. Like, he's mad at Dwight because he's like, you come here to my land and start taking money out of my pocket. And it's just like, dude, what the fuck? You got off a boat at Ellis Island like 2 days ago. What the fuck are you talking? How did you end up in Tulsa? So Dwight and his crew, like, they empty out this guy's bank account. So he's going like ape shit, and he's got all his guys like lined up outside a barn, and he's like, what are you gentlemen gonna do about it? And then just one guy is just like, oh man, I don't know. I think maybe like the ATF and FBI are like really looking hard at us right now. I think maybe we should like lay low for a minute. And the dude just takes out a gun and shoots him in the head, just straight up. Just shoots him dead in the face, just for being like, hey, can we just like maybe like just circle back to this maybe? So he just executes this guy, and he's
maybe
like,
we don't need, we have, apparently we have $8 billion in a bank account somewhere. Maybe we don't need the lucre from our nitrous balloon sales. Just let them have that, and then not antagonize the multiple federal agencies that are on our shit. We just got raided by the ATF a day ago.
So this is like,
what?
Dwight and his crew, they're holed up in Dwight's place of business, the Bread to Buck Bar. Okay, so like they're like he's planning out like Operation Overlord. Which for Dwight the General Manfredi is like, you get your guys and you just sit around a pool table waiting for the bikers to attack you. So the head of Black Adam, the blackest Adam of them all, he's like, all right, lads, you know what the fuck to do. Here's what they're going to do. We all know they're in this bar. He's like, so here's the plan. We're going to walk single file through the door. One at a time.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Like he gets all his, by all the gang. They go through one door. They're not like, he's not like, you two go around the back, you know. No. All of them run through the same door at the same time, like the fucking Three Stooges. And then like they're just in a fucking, it's just a bottleneck. And then Dwight and his crew pop out from behind the bar, and just, it's like a turkey shoot. They just shoot all of them in a row. He fires one bullet. It goes through three guys, and it's.
Yeah, no, the self-harm girl, she sent just so many guys to hell that day. Yes. I want to read a little more into this scene and the presence of the biker gang, because I don't know if I've told you guys, I have heard that there is smoke, there is a rivalry, there is hatred between Taylor Sheridan and a Mr. Kurt Sutter.
What?
Do you think that this scene was Taylor Sheridan sending a very strong subliminal?
Holy shit.
Sutter,
that's yes. Like, yes, I do. Not, yes,
yeah,
I do.
It's like, this is your guy. This is not the Sons of Anarchy. This is what would happen if they went up against the fucking Tulsa King. This is what would happen.
Yes.
This is you.
Also,
I'm Tulsa King. You're Irish bullshit dumbass.
Well, I
think that's
also,
what it is.
I was just going to ask, like, what is with these guys and the Irish thing? Like, it's widely considered that Sons of Anarchy got bad when they decided to go over to Ireland.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, why? What is, like, Irish guys are the toughest guys in the world, but when you're in a show about Italians, they're always going to win. Like, Italians are tougher than Irish.
Yeah.
The Irish have never won in an American movie against the Italians.
No.
Or Puerto Ricans or black people or anything. The Irish, here's the thing. The Irish mafia exists, and they're called the police of any major northeastern city.
Yeah, the Irish mob as an actual criminal gang, the only time it has ever been portrayed as more than three people is the movie The Departed.
And we've seen...
Yeah, like, every Irish guy who's, like, tough psycho with any kind of ambition just becomes a cop. Everybody who's, like, doing... It's like, sitting around in a bar-type crimes is a dude who, like, couldn't pass a civil service exam.
Exactly. The Irish mafia... Being in the Irish mafia, it is like the National Guard if the mafia is the real military. It's just nothing. Like, if you are of Irish descent and you have any criminal talent, you're just loaning out to any other ethnic gang. Being in the Irish mob is just, it's giving up. You're the weekend warrior of organized crime.
I mean, I don't know.
You in soda bread.
Yeah, no. If someone... if three guys, and I think that for all of Los Angeles, there are probably three guys who would openly say they're in the Irish mob. If the entire Irish mob showed up at my doorstep to try to extort me, I would laugh them out of my building. I'm not afraid of them at all. The least feared criminal gang.
So I don't know what Sutter's deal is with it, but I think that Will's theory is correct. This is Sheridan stunting on Kurt Sutter and being like, "You're Irish bike dickheads." Against my Khalsa Kings, they get instantly annihilated.
Yes. And by the way,
because like they even try to build up the Irish guy as like a real mastermind.
Yes,
like a classic evil like a puppeteer who's gonna have like a long term plan. And at the end, 9 episodes it takes him to just walk into a building and get his head
shot in the head
on a fucking on horns.
Reading a little more into this analogy, into this metaphor, who was the leader of the Sons after Jax's Jesus Christ death moment? Chibs.
I don't. Chibs.
Oh, yeah. Chibs. Yeah, yeah.
Chibs.
The Scottish, yeah. Irish, kind the of a weird guy, yeah. mix of the two. A Scottish guy who's really into Ireland. His wife and daughter were stolen by a member of the IRA. It's very confusing. But he represents the Sons. That is Chibs, and Chibs gets gibbed. And that is it. That is the metaphor. Taylor Sheridan
kind of looks like Chibs. He kind of looks the bald like dude. Him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Taylor Sheridan, I think, is, look, like I said, Yellowstone, it's not my type of thing. Clearly, it's not for me. But Taylor Sheridan, if he's shown anything, he's got something for everybody.
He's and stunting on Kurt Sutter right now.
He's stunting the fuck up. Just dancing
Kurt
on
Sutter's
his,
doing
dancing on his grave.
Kurt Sutter got canned off his own show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's
meanwhile,
doing
Taylor
another...
Sheridan is behind 2/3 of scripted television currently.
I kneel to Taylor Sheridan. Taylor Sheridan, I bend the knee to you. If you need anything, if there's anything outside of your incredible realm of expertise, if there happens to be something that you need my assistance on, I will make that show for you.
All right. let me bring it full circle, though, because there's one more thing that happened in the Tulsa King finale at the very end that I was dying. I was rolling. This is a full circle moment because this encompasses everything. This encompasses all four of us, all of our interests in television. So I mentioned that the Bread to Buck Saloon, Dwight sort of adopts it as his base of operations and becomes business partners with like the former, rodeo, like Bronco rider guy played by Brian Hedlund or whatever. He becomes business partner. And then so his plan is like all mafia guys. To open a nice, classy joint, got some good food, got some good music, little gambling in the back, to run a casino, right? Because that's like a license to print money, and like they get like an the Native American guy who grows all their weed to like sign the papers so that they can open a legalized gambling like nightclub, and they need to rent it, but they need to renovate this rather seedy cowboy bar. So after the massacre there, which is like it's funny that like that just happened and there was no investigation. Like 15 guys were murdered.
10 guys got shot and killed.
Bar, and then like
it's nothing, notable guy.
They just buried him behind the bar.
Yeah. So it jumps ahead like 3 months into the future, and then they reveal the renovations that Dwight Manfredi has done to Bread to Buck Saloon to make it his like supper club and casino. And I swear to God, guys, I don't know if you had the same thought I did, but what he does to the Bread to Buck Saloon is exactly what John Taffer does to every bar
he rescues.
He bar rescued the saloon, and it comes in, everything's all sort of sleek and shitty and modern and comprehensively terrible in every way.
Awful.
Exactly like Taffer does.
The Bread to Buck Saloon had some character. It had a little bit of flavor. And this is that Applebee'sification thing that Taffer does to every bar.
Dwight Manfredi was in prison for 25 years. And people were sending him kites describing axe throwing bars. That's what he was doing instead of studying law.
It is funny that theory you had, because like that happens in wrestling, but it also happened in the Fast and the Furious movies where there were contracts that talked about basically The Rock can't take too much damage in this match. Vin Diesel can't take too much damage in this fight. And like that it was like this big story. And like in wrestling, the same thing happens is there's two companies, one guy and one of the companies get somebody from the other company. They beat the crap out of the guy and make him look like a fucking loser so that it kind of makes it worthless. So I could see Taylor Sheridan being like, look, I'll fucking knock motorcycle gangs right off the leaderboard at this point.
Absolutely.
But just the fact that like, that Dwight's vision for like his ideal, like he's finally freed from New York. He can, Tulsa's his city now. And he's planting his flag with a nightclub, a classy nightclub casino that looks exactly like what John Taffer would do to a bar where they used to drink piss out of a shoe. And then he's like, the theme is corporate. It's a business bar. And like, so there's a printer instead of a beer tap or whatever. So there's a fax machine. It's just.
You should have brought Taffer in.
Oh, Taffer like, is a guest star on Tulsa King? Oh, my God.
Well, and it's on Paramount Plus, which is the company that owns Bar Rescue. They should have brought Taffer in and had him put a Disaronno machine in there and fucking everything. It barely looked different, but it looked like shit. The new version.
Yes.
It looked like what a mafia guy would think a cowboy bar looks like.
Well, it's like, it's the same thing with Taffer. He's like, he's just sort of like, oh, we need a theme here. And it's just like, Tulsa? Okay. I'll put up framed, like, glossy photographs of the city of Tulsa in the bar, just to remind people that that's the theme we're going for, is Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I finally went to a John Taffer Bar Rescue restaurant, and it was
pretty good,
an incredibly horrible experience. Altogether, just was like, the service was terrible. Like in a way like that whoever was serving us was sitting at a table on their computer and they would walk over every like 15 minutes and be like, hey, do you guys want something? And then the food tasted like shit. And it was just like, wow, he just it's beautiful that it's kind of like a carny trick that he just goes in, moves some furniture around, and then the company can be successful for 6 months.
Fucking
because they got on TV.
John Taffer.
The entire thing that they give you for being on Bar Rescue is that now you're on television and local people whose lives are completely barren of anything to do or any meaning are like, oh, let's go to that place that I saw on the TV show.
John Taffer.
And that gets you like 6 months worth of income.
John Taffer is like the world.
That you could then bet, like gamble with and maybe make your mortgage if you hit red.
Yeah. John Taffer is like the World Bank or the IMF going into these developing countries. They do not recover from Taffer's
giving microloans to horny alcoholics.
I need to bar owners across America. I know I've said there are too many bars. Maybe merge and start a non-aligned movement where you're neither with John Taffer nor Gordon Ramsay. You're sort of starting.
Yeah, we have a place that it's really funny. We have a place that Gordon Ramsay like made over in town. And it's in what used to be the old Wonder Bread factory. And like, so that would lead
you to
think,
isn't that a sign of America today?
Yeah.
Wonder Bread jobs go away and some smug British asshole comes in and makes a gastropub in what used to be something that provided 1,000 jobs for a community.
Yeah.
It changed the name to City Tavern. It was
that'll
just like
stand
as
out.
Generic.
That'll really stand out.
If you saw the sign outside, it really looks like something they went to like Michael's craft store and bought. Like it's one of the worst vibes. And I was just like, they could have called it like Wonderland or something like that, really do the history thing. But instead they were like, what about City Tavern? The thing that didn't get a lot of play from John Taffer that really bums me out, I watched the first episode, was the one where he would fix your marriage. Like, it was a real bummer
that
people didn't gravitate to that the way they did Bar Rescue, because that is a way more psycho thing to have John Taffer involved in than fixing bar.
If John Taffer fixed your marriage, you were, I don't know, weeks away from killing your spouse. And that's probably what happened 6 months later, too.
John
we installed a two-touch PCO system on your wife's gooch.
when me and Matt stood in that room and watched John Taffer, there is a truly fucking psycho energy to the guy.
Oh, my God.
You're just standing there, and it's like, this guy's fucking, he's yelled.
Screaming at everyone. He's so mad at them for letting small business down.
For 15 minutes, it never slowed down. It is like 80s wrestling promos. He went up there, screamed for 15 minutes, and then walked off stage and was gone. And it was amazing. But
before that, he made everyone take a vow to support small business. Yes.
Yeah. It was wild. And he spoke shorter than anybody. He was like the main event at this American for Prosperity thing. And he was shorter than Bobby Jindal and Jeb, who we also got to see. One of my favorite memories from that is we were sitting behind this person when Bobby Jindal came out, and the woman just, she like leaned over to the person she's with and was like, "That's Bobby Jindal." Like she was like super excited. And it's always stuck with me. Like Bobby Jindal is the guy.
What happened to Bobby Jindal?
I had that moment when covering the 2016 primaries, when I was at someone who was just floundering. I think it was a Marco event in some pub in New Hampshire that looked like it needed a Ramsay makeover. And Carly Fiorina was supposed to make a later appearance. And these two massholes, two guys with like, who looked like they would be sent to kill Dwight and Freddy, actually. They were wearing floor length leather jackets. And they just showed up screaming, "Where's Carly? We're here for Carly Fiorina." And it just gave me the insight into like, what kind of a fucking dope you have to be really into like, the Republican primary, not even like Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, Carly Fiorina, like these two fucking assholes, these two guys who are probably like the only thing I could guess for their job is like failed loan shark. They're like, oh, the woman who like ran HP into the ground. That's who we like.
I have this thing where basically every band that ever had a hit still has an audience. Like there's still people who will go see every, like the Blue Dabu D guys. Like there's I listened to a podcast where the guy's a real big fan of Aqua, the Barbie girl. And he like fucking travels to go see Aqua. And I find that fascinating. And the political version of that is some Republican that got 1% of the vote that somebody's really excited to see.
I mean,
it's when those people were excited about Bloomberg. I remember when like in 2016, there was a period where we were just sitting on Twitter watching people fucking go nuts about Bloomberg being the president. And I wonder what they're doing now. They're probably working for the Lincoln Project, but I wonder actually what they're doing.
They're extorting vape shops in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yeah. Right
now. Carly Fiorina.
All right, gentlemen, let's wrap it up there for today. I would like to thank one of our oldest podcasting friend, Brian Quimby. But before we let you go, we should let all listeners to this show know that you have recently had a change of address on Patreon.com.
It's patreon.com/murderxbrian. It's all the stuff that I've been doing for a few years plus. You know, I just finished this week all of the Shocktober season one. Will be up there. Like I'm getting my archive up there sort of slowly. And currently work the last episode scheduled to post on Friday. I just did a mini series about Dane Cook called Now We're Cooking, where we watched a few Dane Cook things and then decided if they were cooking. And I'm going to spoil this for you. The only thing that was cooking was Mr. Brooks. That was the one thing that was good. The rest of the stuff was shit. And I'm starting one called This Is My TED Talk, where I have people where I'm going to review TED and TED 2 a half hour at a time with different people. because somebody brought up, I think like it's weird because he's kind of lost some star quality, but like Seth MacFarlane is like a, like I recently would be going through HBO Max and see A Million Ways to Die in the West on there. And I was just like, I can't believe people even saw that. And so I want to do a Seth MacFarlane thing. I've never seen Ted and Ted 2. So I'm pretty excited to try it. But also it's, you know, again, we've got like Shocktober. I have a series called I'm Sorry that Will was on that people really love. It's where we make fun of public apologies, which is kind of mean, but we pick people that are bad. Well, but yeah, I just do series. Yeah.
Yeah. Plenty of Murder Brian content. Now under one umbrella, and I'm commanding you, the listener, to like and subscribe on Patreon to the new Brian Quimby Patreon.
But Murder X Brian. Patreon.com/MurderXBrian.
Link will be in the show description. But thanks once again, Brian, for coming on the show. That does it for us today. Gentlemen, bye-bye.
Bye.